Are you an entrepreneur that would like to quickly free up and create more cash flow and lasting wealth? Welcome to the Chris Miles Money Show. Chris Miles is a cash flow expert and the financial advocate for the entrepreneur. Chris will teach you how to create more freedom and more prosperity right now, not about saving 25 to 40 years from now. It's all about creating wealth and prosperity today. He's been featured on U.S. News, CNN Money, Bankrate.com, interviewed internationally on TV and radio, and has a high reputation for getting his clients fast, life-altering financial results with his company, Money Ripples. Learn more at MoneyRipples.com. Now, here's your host, Chris Miles.
Hello, my fellow Ripplers. This is Chris Miles, your cash flow expert and anti-financial advisor. Welcome out for a fantastic show today, a show that's for you and about you. Those of you who have been working so stinking hard for your money, you're now ready for your money to start working harder for you. Those that want to work because you want to, not because you have to. We have all the cash flow, the freedom, the prosperity today, not 30 or 40 years from now, but right now, so you can have that life that you love. And as Ripplers, create that ripple effect, not just in your own life and your family's life, but to bless others' lives too. And so grateful to have you guys on. Thank you so much for those who've been reaching out. And man, I love the fact that I've been able to serve so many of you. And I appreciate all the good feedback you've been giving me and sharing about the show too, sharing this with others. It's been fantastic. So thank you for joining us and being a part of this movement and this journey. So today, you know, I wanted to bring on someone, and you guys know this, like if when I bring on guests, you're guilty until proven innocent, right? And so this was no exception. Somebody reached out to me and says, hey, I think this person would be perfect for your show. And so as I looked into her, I thought, oh, you could not be closer to that truth because it's really true. Fantastic lady. As our guest today, she's the founder and host of the Richard Geek podcast. So for those of you who are podcast nuts, Richard Geek, look it up. Nicole helps IT and other high-income professionals find creative ways to build wealth and financial freedom. Now, while working full-time in technology, she and her husband have built a real estate investment firm with an impressive portfolio that's included hotels, multifamily, and even single-family residential properties. Nicole believes that it's not only possible but essential that others, much like many of you here, that are high-income, have these high-income roles, should find ways to make money to work for you. And she's here to share some of these proven techniques with you to do that today. So, Nicole, welcome to our show.
Thank you, Chris. I am so excited to be here.
Yeah. So give us a little story about your journey and where you've come from and to where you are today.
Well, our journey actually started in 1999. It was just a couple years after my husband and I got married, and I read the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Uh-oh, that's
and,
dangerous.
Yes. And if the premise of the book, obviously, is that if you don't find a way to make your money work for you, you'll never get ahead in life. And Robert Kiyosaki, the author of the book, is an advocate for having a business. Mm-hmm. Now, he has a lot of focus around real estate investing, but it could be other businesses as well. And his whole point is you have to be able to build up something. And when you own a business, you get to take advantage of great tax benefits. There's a lot of really incentives from our government that make sense if you own a business. And you are not just a W-2 employee. So the real estate aspect of that book really hit home with me. And I said, oh, we've got to do this. And I'm very much of an action taker. So I signed us up for a seminar probably just a few weeks later after reading that. And we came back from that seminar, all gung-ho. And we went out and we got properties, which is a whole other story as to how we did that because we were pretty creative. And we failed. We failed because the seminar was, how do you buy properties, right? How do you find them? How do you buy them? But it wasn't everything else, which was, how do you actually analyze them? How do you manage residents? How do you actually make them profitable? So we failed miserably. I'm very publicly talk about that because it was actually such a great experience and really kind of set the foundation for how we invest today.
No, that's the best lessons, isn't it? I mean, the thing that you oftentimes the life of hard knocks or those lessons you get, I mean, that's invaluable wisdom that you gain from those kind of experiences.
It is. And it makes you, in our case, it makes us pretty conservative investors.
Yeah.
So you look at the real estate market, and I think a lot of people will say, oh my gosh, what happened in, you know, when we had the real estate market crash, and I don't ever want to go through that. That was a very speculative time. And we've never been speculative because we had that bad experience. We're 100% about cash flow. We don't even look at the property if it doesn't cash flow with a bunch of different scenarios. So it's, I think, you know, it's interesting when people look at real estate and get kind of scared of it. Know that when you're grounded in the right principles, it can be a fantastic vehicle.
Exactly. And I'm sure you get asked the question all the time, hey, you really want to be buying real estate now when it's so high? All that stuff, right?
Absolutely. And what I say actually, so when I talk with people and they're having that same scenario is, mm-hmm. let's say you're buying a single family home. What I would recommend is, first of all, we have amazing, currently very low interest rates. So those are really great to still take advantage of, 30-year fixed on a single family home. But then the other huge benefit is you can go back and look at, you know, with internet research, with firms that have publicly provide their data, you can go and look at 10 years, maybe 15 years if you want, of rental data. And now all that data is available to you. So now you can look at, okay, what was the worst time, the worst possible time during the last 15 years? How much did that house or that size of a house rent for?
Right.
Plug that into your number. And if you're still making cash flow, then you know that in the worst possible time during the past 15 years, you would still make money with that asset.
Right. It's just minimizing that risk, right? It's like getting it to as low as possible where, and sadly, I know with a lot of people I end up, you know, hearing from or talking to is they've been so ingrained to believe that high risk creates high returns. And so, really the definition of risk is chance of loss. So they think you have to have this high risk of loss in order to get any kind of decent returns. And if it's low risk, they think, well, how is it possible you could ever get high returns, which is bogus because it's only financial companies that taught you to believe that you should take all the risk and possibly not get any of the reward, right?
Absolutely. And it's just not the case.
So obviously, so you went through that little rough patch, but now it sounds like you're starting to be more, as you say, conservative. Other people look at you as being risky, but you and I both know that you're probably less risky than most everybody else out there, right?
Absolutely. And I always like to have a plan B. In fact, I talk about that in the podcast I think everyone should have a plan B and why you should create incremental income streams in addition to your W-2 income. With our properties, we always try to have a plan B too, right? Mm-hmm. So if the market changed, what could we maybe do with this property? How could we change this property? What are some other ways that we could increase revenue based on what's happening? So I'm really big into, you know, kind of understanding the dynamics for your local or where you're investing real estate market, and always kind of keeping your eye on what maybe you could also be doing with that property.
Yeah, kind of a contingency plan, right?
Exactly.
So what are you doing now? Like we mentioned this even before we started on going on the air here. You're working currently in what field?
I work in technology. I'm full-time working for a major Fortune 100 company.
Awesome. Now, why are you doing that? Because I know you have the ability. You could quit this job, right? But why are you still working in that field?
Because I absolutely love it. I'm very competitive. I'm in the absolute best place. It's a fantastic company. I actually left the company and came back. I love it so much. The culture, just everything about it. And I love technology. It's fast paced. There's so many different things that are happening. And I just believe this is the place to be. If you're in tech, you're powering the world, no matter what industry. And when there's an outage, things stop, right? And it's such a powerful place to be. It's so fascinating. So I love it. Absolutely love it.
And not to mention, you're in a pretty male-dominated field too, which is really interesting. It's always fun when I find a woman in IT because it's like, you're like the, I don't know, it's like a pink poodle, you know? It's so awesome.
I've never heard that expression. I love it. I love it. I would say the industry's done a very good job of trying to encourage more women to come into the industry. There's a lot of different groups and nonprofit organizations, and it's pretty cool to see, but it's still, I just think it's still, people kind of don't gravitate toward it because they think it might not be creative or that it might be sort of a boring type of field. So I think a lot of women go toward other types of careers, but the reality is it's very creative, incredibly fascinating, just a really great place to be.
Now, I've noticed that too. Like I was telling you before, like the number one, if there's any kind of profession that reaches out to me, I mean, dentists are up there, but I would say the number one is definitely IT managers. And it's so common to see even husband and wife working for the same companies as managers in just different departments. And it's so interesting to see how that field's grown and just, data has become like the new currency, the new gold, you know?
It is, absolutely. And everyone's trying to figure out how to mine it and what to be able to actually take action on, and automation. There's a whole world around that.
Yeah. Now, as you've started doing this investing and stuff, and you said you mentioned, you know, you left the company, then you came back. I mean, as you start to build all these additional streams of income and create more freedom in that lifestyle that you want, like, what has really surprised you about that life? Like, did you have a different goal in the beginning than what you currently have now?
Yeah, that's a great question. In the beginning, I was just following the advice in the book, and I thought, okay, I want to be smart about this, but I don't think I was mature enough at that young of an age to really put together a plan and understand, you know, how to build upon that. I just think I was just not in that mindset. Over time now, I think what's interesting as we've invested and grown our portfolio is we absolutely love real estate. And now we're adding to that portfolio in different ways, right? We branched into hotels about 2 years ago and now are on our second hotel. We just put that one under contract. And so we love learning about different niches. And we love the opportunity to look at what's happening in the market and say, wow, that we could really do something with that. We love seeing taking over a property that has had poor management because we can see that right away. And we get excited about the opportunity to make a change. So or make an impact and a change within that property.
So in the beginning, was it more money related then? Now it's just more the thrill. What's the difference now?
Oh, that's a great point. Maybe it was more money motivated, but in the beginning we didn't make any money at all, and we actually lost money, and it became a downward spiral. and then I would say in the middle it was, you know, going back to obviously trying to make money through the process, but you know, putting the right principles in place, that was pretty successful for us. And now, yeah, I think it's a good way to phrase it. The thrill. It's pretty exciting. It becomes your baby, right? If you can make an improvement in this business and you can point to that and you're tracking and watching the metrics, it's pretty thrilling.
And that's one thing that I know it's hard for some people to see. And that's why, you know, when people come to me, they're like, okay, Chris, like, what's the investment I should do? I'm like, well, what do you want to do? Like, what would be thrilling even if you didn't need the money? Like, because I never want somebody to just do investing for the paycheck. Because if they do that, what makes that different than any other job you can get a paycheck for, right? And I love to see when people find something that they really enjoy. Because in my experience, whenever an investor does that, they get better at it. In fact, they hone their craft and they get better and better to the point where, you know, they don't ever worry about whether they're being risky or not, because they know that they're in their lane. They're doing exactly what they love doing, and it's a passion. And so they do it because they love it. And the money is just a bonus for them, right? It becomes gravy on top, and they can't even believe they get paid to do something that they actually enjoy.
It's such a great point. I would say, so we own a variety of different types of properties. We prefer the larger properties like the hotels. Mm-hmm. We have single family homes. I don't enjoy those as much. Yeah. So I would say that, but I look at them as a hedge. Because I do think that's a really good conservative, you can't go wrong with a certain type of home and a long-term rental, because everybody needs a place to live. So if you're buying in kind of that right space, so I look at them as a hedge, but I don't think I enjoy them as much as the hotel, because as the hotel example, because that's more of a business. So it's kind of a difference.
Yeah, you kind of have a business / real estate blend with that kind of investment class right there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And what is it about the hotel that you really like? Because you said the business, and for a lot of people that's scary, because I know anybody that does real estate also as a business, it's a whole nother monster. You know, it's much different than just trying to create passive income like many of my listeners want to do here. What is it about the hotel industry you really like?
You know, it's there's a few things about it. We really like the locations that we've invested in, right? And what is happening in those locations. And it's a lot of business travel that basically is leveraging our hotels. Oh, wait a minute. To digress for a second, because a lot of people say, well, aren't you worried about Airbnb and short-term rentals?
Sure, yeah.
And that's a huge market here. I'm in Scottsdale, Arizona, and this is one of the biggest markets for that. You tend to see that the short-term rental market like that is for vacation travelers, families, that type of thing, and they want a bigger space or they want different kinds of amenities. Our hotels are, we generally are in limited service. It's for business travelers.
Right.
They're coming in and they don't want to mess with things, right? Like they just want to check in, have a hotel front lobby, and then check out, and none of the, sometimes the logistics that you might have around short-term rentals. So, so that doesn't scare me as much. Knowing that that's the piece that's coming. But I think that it's a fascinating industry, and it's weird too, because they're franchise hotels, but they're not like normal franchises. So unless you're in kind of like a high-end boutique hotel, you're generally, to be able to get business, you do need to have a branded, what's called a flag hotel. And so you're under a brand that's giving you marketing dollars and generally booking and some back-end support services. But in the hotel industry, you're not buying the property because it's a certain brand necessarily. You're buying it because of location, like you do any other piece of real estate. In the normal franchise industry, you're buying the brand and you move the brand based on where you want to be. Like you don't see a McDonald's generally doesn't become a Wendy's, but you will absolutely see a Holiday Inn suddenly become a Choice, you know, a Comfort Inn. So that, that happens and changes over all the time. So I love that, because you get this support and the marketing, and, you know, you kind of have your target, you know what your market is, that who's coming to stay in your hotel. But then in the hotel industry, you have all these other levers you can actually work with, right? So you can choose how you want to manage it. You can make other pieces. If you're doing construction, you can get your own construction company. So you can have your own products. If you have free breakfast, you can go negotiate those contracts on your own. You're not having to buy all of that through the franchise. So it's kind of a cool dynamic.
You get some freedom, but you also have some structure too.
Absolutely.
What was the most frightening thing when you guys were first looking at that opportunity?
I think it's scary anytime you go from bigger to bigger to bigger property. So
you were literally playing Monopoly. I mean, you went from one house to multiple houses, and then you upgraded to a hotel, right?
Well, we had apartment complexes. That's actually where my husband's background is managing apartment complexes. And that's a sweet spot for us. We absolutely love it. But the market was changing here in Phoenix, and we needed to find a different niche that was still kind of in an area that we were interested in. Like, for example, our preference was we weren't wanting to suddenly go buy a commercial office space as an example. So we're still kind of in that people are living, even though it's temporary, in the facility. But I think as you get bigger and bigger, it is a little bit scarier, right? And as you're getting mortgages, and ours is a small business loan, the monthly payments are huge, right? But the revenue's there too, right? But those are big numbers, and it's certainly not like your house payment. So I think that can be a little daunting, but you know, it's like anything. As you get into it, you know that you've run your numbers, you know you've done your analysis. So you just calm down and just, you know, watch that play out and continue to keep a close monitor, and you kind of can overcome that initial fear.
Oh, I love it. And I love it too, because Phoenix, I've noticed Phoenix is kind of the petri dish for the U.S. when it comes to the forefront of whatever's coming. But for you to kind of take a step, say, you know what, I'm going to take something else that maybe not a lot of people look at. Let me take a hotel. You know, that's a very different approach.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, yeah. We had all of the major private equity groups. We had a lot of investors from California, I think primarily California, coming in and buying up a lot of the properties, which drove up the prices. And what happens is now you're not getting the returns that you expect. Yep. And you have to look at that. And I know you do a lot of analysis with your clients around this is, okay, if you are only expecting to make, let's say, 3-4%, which some of these, that's kind of where these properties were ending up in the apartment complex side. Mm-hmm. And the big major REITs, and they don't really care because they just have funds to put somewhere. So for them, they don't really mind. But as an individual investor, 3-4%, you do have to ask yourself, it's a lot of work. Yeah. Are you, and if, even if you like it, that's probably not enough money for the amount of work. So that's why we switched. Yeah.
What would be the message you give my listeners, which are very similar to a lot of your listeners too on your show? You know, what would be the advice that you would give to them?
I would say that it is important to find some kind of incremental income stream in addition to your W-2. If you think about it this way, you have your W-2 income, and if you have two income family, that's fine as well. But you're all of, it's kind of like if you're a company and you have one major client and all your revenue comes from one major client, what happens when something changes with that client or something changes with you and suddenly you have that loss of revenue? I feel like as you build up incremental income streams, you're just giving yourself other buffers and other vehicles. Plus, the government actually incents you to do it. There's a lot of tax benefits. That's significant, especially if you're a high income earner. Businesses, real estate, those are huge benefits that will help you reduce just what you're getting off your W-2. So I think the piece that I see people kind of get stuck with is getting started, right? They say, I don't know what to buy, or I'm really busy. I don't want to do this. Oh, I don't want to deal with tenants. Uh-huh. There's a lot of different ways to get started in real estate investing where you can minimize those pieces or do them if you want to. Some people like to. So I think the point is educate yourself on the options that are available and then just start small and do something. Yeah.
That's great advice. Fantastic advice. And I know there's so many people in that situation right now, because I've talked to many of them, and that first step is the hardest one. You know, that's the one they're like, oh, I don't want to gamble. I don't want to mess up. Someone will even go back to the 401k, which sucks, but still, like, at least they know everybody's doing it. So if they lose, everybody else loses too. They don't feel as bad, right? Well, yeah, that's great advice. So thank you so much, Nicole. And so if people want to follow you, what's the best way they can do that?
The best place to reach me is just through my website, which is therichergeek.com.
I love that. Therichergeek.com. Perfect.
Yes.
And of course, your show is by the same name as well, right?
Yes, it is. It's because it's really for people in technology. That's who I'm speaking to, because I get you. I understand what it's like.
Well, Nicole, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your experience. It's so invaluable to hear that. And I know a lot of my listeners got a ton of this today. So thank you so much for sharing that.
Thank you so much for having me on, Chris. It's been great.
You bet. And the rest of you guys, thank you for joining us. And again, it's all about taking action, right? It's about learning it, taking the information, but then using that to take it to that next level. And listen, we're not alone. I know Nicole and I are not the only ones that are dealing with this. There are so many of us out there that are doing this right now and actually enjoying that kind of freedom that you can enjoy as well. So, you know, the biggest thing is educate and then implement. Educate and then execute. So anyways, guys, I hope you make it a wonderful and prosperous week, and we'll see you later.
Thanks for listening to The Chris Miles Money Show. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes and make us a part of your daily routine. And check out our blogs and learn more about Chris, his services, and how we can help you at MoneyRipples.com. Join us next time on the Chris Miles Money Show.